The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 21. Tabooed Things. Section 11. Knots and Rings Tabooed. We have seen that among the many taboos which the flamandiles at Rome had to observe, there was one that forbade him to have a knot on any part of his garments, and another that obliged him to wear no ring unless it were broken. In like manner, Moslem pilgrims to Mecca are in a state of sanctity or taboo and may wear on their persons neither knots nor rings. These rules are probably of kindred significance, and may conveniently be considered together. To begin with knots, many people in different parts of the world entertain a strong objection to having any knot about their person at certain critical seasons, particularly childbirth, marriage, and death. Thus among the Saxons of Transylvania, when a woman is in travail, all knots on her garments are untied, because it is believed that this will facilitate her delivery, and with the same intention all the locks in the house, whether on doors or boxes, are unlocked. The Laps think that a lying-in woman should have no knot on her garments, because a knot would have the effect of making the delivery difficult and painful. In the East Indies this superstition is extended to the whole time of pregnancy. The people believed that if a pregnant woman were to tie knots, or braid, or make anything fast, the child would thereby be constricted or the woman would herself be tied up, when her time came. Nay, some of them enforce the observance of the rule on the father as well as the mother of the unborn child. Among the Sediaks neither of their parents may bind up anything with a string or make anything fast during the wife's pregnancy. In the Tambala tribe of North Salaps a ceremony is performed in the fourth or fifth month of a woman's pregnancy, and after it her husband is forbidden, among many other things, to tie any fast knots and to sit with his legs crossed over each other. In all these cases the idea seems to be that the tying of a knot would, as they say in the East Indies, tie up the woman, in other words, impede and perhaps prevent her delivery, or delay her convalescence after the birth. On the principles of homeopathic or imitative magic, the physical obstacle or impediment of a knot on a cord would create a corresponding obstacle or impediment in the body of the woman. That this is really the explanation of the rule appears from a custom observed by the Hos of West Africa at a difficult birth. When a woman is in hard labor and cannot bring forth, they call in a magician to her aid. He looks at her and says, "The child is bound in the womb. That is why she cannot be delivered." On the entreaties of her female relations he then promises to loosen the bond so that she may bring forth. For that purpose he orders them to fetch a tough creeper from the forest, and with it he binds the hands and feet of the sufferer on her back. Then he takes a knife and calls out the woman's name, and when she answers he cuts through the creeper with a knife, saying, "I cut through today thy bonds and thy child's bonds." After that he chops up the creeper small, puts the bits in a vessel of water, and bathes the woman with the water. Here the cutting of the creeper with which the woman's hands and feet are bound is a simple piece of homeopathic or imitative magic. By releasing her limbs from their bonds the magician imagines that he simultaneously releases the child in her womb from the trammels which impede its birth. The same train of thought underlies a practice observed by some peoples of opening all locks, doors, and so on, while a birth is taking place in the house. We have seen that at such a time the Germans of Transylvania open all the locks, and the same thing is done also in Voigtland and Mecklenburg. In northwestern Argyllshire superstitious people used to open every lock in the house at childbirth. In the island of Salsette near Bombay, when a woman is in hard labor, all locks of doors or drawers are opened with a key to facilitate her delivery. Among the Mandelings of Sumatra the lids of all chests, boxes, pans, and so forth are opened. And if this does not produce the desired effect, the anxious husband has to strike the projecting ends of some of the house beams in order to loosen them. For they think that everything must be open and loose to facilitate the delivery. In Chittagong, when a woman cannot bring her child to the birth, The midwife gives orders to throw all doors and windows wide open, to uncork all bottles, to remove the bungs from all casks, to unloose the cows in the stall, the horses in the stable, the watchdog in his kennel, to set free sheep, fowls, ducks, and so forth. This universal liberty accorded to the animals and even to inanimate things is, according to the people, an infallible means of ensuring the woman's delivery and allowing the babe to be born. In the island of Saghalien, when a woman is in labor, her husband undoes everything that can be undone. He loosens the plaits of his hair and the laces of his shoes. Then he unties whatever is tied in the house or its vicinity. In the courtyard he takes the axe out of the log in which it is stuck. He unfastens the boat, if it is moored to a tree. He withdraws the cartridges from his gun, and the arrows from his crossbow. Again, we have seen that a Tambal a man abstains not only from tying knots, but also from sitting with crossed legs during his wife's pregnancy. The train of thought is the same in both cases. Whether you cross threads in tying a knot, or only cross your legs in sitting at your ease, you are equally, on the principles of homeopathic magic, crossing or thwarting the free course of things, and your action cannot but check and impede whatever may be going forward in your neighborhood. Of this important truth the Romans were fully aware. To sit beside a pregnant woman or a patient under medical treatment with clasped hands, says the grave Pliny, is to cast a malignant spell over the person, and it is worse still if you nurse your leg or legs with your clasped hands, or lay one leg over the other. Such postures were regarded by the old Romans as a let and hindrance to business of every sort, and at a council of war or a meeting of magistrates, at prayers and sacrifices, no man was suffered to cross his legs or clasp his hands. The stock instance of the dreadful consequences that might flow from doing one or the other was that of Alcmena, who travailed with Hercules for 7 days and 7 nights, because the goddess Lucina sat in front of the house with clasped hands and crossed legs, and the child could not be born until the goddess had been beguiled into changing her attitude. It is a Bulgarian superstition that if a pregnant woman is in the habit of sitting with crossed legs, she will suffer much in childbirth. In some parts of Bavaria, when conversation comes to a standstill and silence ensues, they say, "Surely somebody has crossed his legs." The magical effect of knots entrammelling and obstructing human activity was believed to be manifested at marriage not less than at birth. During the Middle Ages, and down to the 18th century, it seems to have been commonly held in Europe that the consummation of marriage could be prevented by anyone who, while the wedding ceremony was taking place, either locked a lock or tied a knot in a cord, and then threw the lock or the cord away. The lock or the knotted cord had to be flung into water. And until it had been found and unlocked, or untied, no real union of the married pair was possible. Hence it was a grave offense, not only to cast such a spell, but also to steal or make away with the material instrument of it, whether lock or knotted cord. In the year 1718 the Parliament of Bordeaux sentenced someone to be burned alive for having spread desolation through a whole family by means of knotted cords. And in 1705 two persons were condemned to death in Scotland for stealing certain charmed knots which a woman had made, in order thereby to mar the wedded happiness of Spalding of Ashantilly. The belief in the efficacy of these charms appears to have lingered in the Highlands of Perthshire down to the end of the 18th century, for at that time it was still customary in the beautiful parish of Lochiriot, between the River Tamel and the River Tay, to unloose carefully every knot in the clothes of the bride and bridegroom before the celebration of the marriage ceremony. We meet with the same superstition and the same custom at the present day in Syria. The persons who help a Syrian bridegroom to don his wedding garments take care that no knot is tied on them and no button buttoned, for they believe that a button buttoned or a knot tied would put it within the power of his enemies to deprive him of his nuptial rights by magical means. The fear of such charms is diffused all over North Africa at the present day. To render a bridegroom impotent, the enchanter has only to tie a knot in a handkerchief which he had previously placed quietly on some part of the bridegroom's body when he was mounted on horseback ready to fetch his bride, So long as the knot in the handkerchief remains tied, so long will the bridegroom remain powerless to consummate the marriage. The maleficent power of knots may also be manifested in the infliction of sickness, disease, and all kinds of misfortune. Thus among the Hos of West Africa, a sorcerer will sometimes curse his enemy and tie a knot in a stalk of grass, saying, "I have tied up so-and-so in this knot. May all evil light upon him. When he goes into the field, may a snake sting him. When he goes to the chase, may a ravening beast attack him. And when he steps into a river, may the water sweep him away. When it rains, may the lightning strike him. May evil nights be his." It is believed that in the knot the sorcerer has bound up the life of his enemy. In the Quran there is an allusion to the mischief of those who puff into the knots, and an Arab commentator on the passage explains that the words refer to women who practice magic by tying knots in cords, and then blowing and spitting upon them. He goes on to relate how, once upon a time, a wicked Jew bewitched the Prophet Muhammad himself by tying 9 knots on a string, which he then hid in a well. So the Prophet fell ill, and nobody knows what might have happened if the Archangel Gabriel had not opportunely revealed to the holy man the place where the knotted cord was concealed. The trusty Ali soon fetched the baleful thing from the well. And the Prophet recited over it certain charms, which were specially revealed to him for the purpose. At every verse of the charms a knot untied itself, and the Prophet experienced a certain relief. If knots are supposed to kill, they are also supposed to cure. This follows from the belief that to undo the knots which are causing sickness will bring the sufferer relief. But apart from this negative virtue of maleficent knots, there are certain beneficent knots to which a positive power of healing is ascribed. Pliny tells us that some folk cured diseases of the groin by taking a thread from the web, tying 7 or 9 knots on it, and then fastening it to the patient's groin. But to make the cure effectual, it was necessary to name some widow as each knot was tied. O'Donovan describes a remedy for fever employed among the Turcomans. The enchanter takes some camel hair and spins it into a stout thread, droning a spell the while. Next he ties 7 knots on the thread, blowing on each knot before he pulls it tight. This knotted thread is then worn as a bracelet on his wrist by the patient. Every day one of the knots is untied and blown upon, and when the 7th knot is undone the whole thread is rolled up into a ball and thrown into a river, bearing away, as they imagine, the fever with it. Again, knots may be used by an enchantress to win a lover and attach him firmly to herself. Thus the lovesick maiden Virgil seeks to draw Daphnis to her from the city by spells and by tying 3 knots on each of 3 strings of different colors. So an Arab maiden, who had lost her heart to a certain man, tried to gain his love and bind him to herself by tying knots in his whip. But her jealous rival undid the knots. On the same principle, magic knots may be employed to stop a runaway. In Swaziland you may often see grass tied in knots at the side of the footpaths. Every one of these knots tells of a domestic tragedy. A wife has run away from her husband, and he and his friends have gone in pursuit, binding up the paths, as they call it, in this fashion to prevent the fugitive from doubling back over them. A net, from its affluence of knots, has always been considered in Russia very efficacious against sorcerers. Hence in some places, when a bride is being dressed in her wedding attire, a fishing net is flung over her to keep her out of harm's way. For a similar purpose, the bridegroom and his companions are often girt with pieces of net, or at least with tight drawn girdles, for before a wizard can begin to injure them he must undo all the knots in the net, or take off the girdles. But often a Russian amulet is merely a knotted thread. A skein of red wool wound about the arms and legs is thought to ward off aches and fevers. And 9 skeins, fastened round a child's neck, are deemed a preservative against scarlatina. In that for government, a bag of a special kind is tied to the neck of the cow which walks before the rest of the herd, in order to keep off wolves. Its force binds the maw of the ravening beast. On the same principle, a padlock is carried thrice round a herd of horses before they go afield in the spring, and the bearer locks and unlocks it as he goes, saying, I lock from my herd the mouths of the grey wolves with this steel lock. Knots and locks may serve to avert not only wizards and wolves but death itself. When they brought a woman to the stake at St. Andrew's in 1572 to burn her alive for a witch, they found on her a white cloth like a collar, with strings and men in knots on the strings. They took it from her, sorely against her will, for she seemed to think that she could not die in the fire, if only the cloth with the knotted strings was on her. When it was taken away, she said, "Now I have no hope of myself." In many parts of England it is thought that a person cannot die so long as any locks are locked or bolts shut in the house. It is therefore a very common practice to undo all locks and bolts when the sufferer is plainly near his end, in order that his agony may not be unduly prolonged. For example, in the year 1863, at Taunton, a child lay sick of scarlatine and death seemed inevitable. A jury of matrons was, as it were, impaneled, and to prevent the child dying hard all the doors in the house, all the drawers, all the boxes, all the cupboards were thrown wide open, the keys taken out, and the body of the child placed under a beam, whereby a sure, certain, and easy passage into eternity could be secured. Strange to say, the child declined to avail itself of the facilities for dying so obligingly placed at its disposal by the sagacity and experience of the British matrons of Taunton. It preferred to live rather than give up the ghost just then. The rule which prescribes that at certain magical and religious ceremonies the hair should hang loose and the feet should be bare is probably based on the same fear of trammelling and impeding the action in hand, whatever it may be, by the presence of any knot or constriction, whether on the head or on the feet of the performer. A similar power to bind and hamper spiritual as well as bodily activities is ascribed by some people to rings. Thus in the island of Carpathus people never button the clothes they put upon a dead body and they are careful to remove all rings from it. For the spirit, they say, can even be detained in the little finger, and cannot rest. Here it is plain that even if the soul is not definitely supposed to issue at death from the fingertips, yet the ring is conceived to exercise a certain constrictive influence which detains and imprisons the immortal spirit in spite of its efforts to escape from the tabernacle of clay. In short, the ring, like the knot, acts as a spiritual fetter. This may have been the reason of an ancient Greek maxim, attributed to Pythagoras, which forbade people to wear rings. Nobody might enter the ancient Arcadian sanctuary of the mistress at Lycosera with a ring on his or her finger. Persons who consulted the oracle of Faunus had to be chaste, to eat no flesh, and to wear no rings. On the other hand, the same constriction which hinders the egress of the soul may prevent the entrance of evil spirits. Hence we find rings used as amulets against demons, witches, and ghosts. In the Tyrol it is said that a woman in childbirth should never take off her wedding ring, or spirits and witches will have power over her. Among the Laps, the person who is about to place a corpse in the coffin receives from the husband, wife, or children of the deceased a brass ring, which he must wear fastened to his right arm until the corpse is safely deposited in the grave. The ring is believed to serve the person as an amulet against any harm which the ghost might do to him. How far the custom of wearing finger rings may have been influenced by, or even have sprung from, a belief in their efficacy as amulets to keep the soul in the body, or demons out of it, is a question which seems worth considering. Here we are only concerned with the belief insofar as it seems to throw light on the rule that the flamandilius might not wear a ring unless it were broken. Taken in conjunction with the rule which forbade him to have a knot on his garments, it points to a fear that the powerful spirit embodied in him might be trammelled and hampered in its goings out and comings in by such corporeal and spiritual fetters as rings and knots.